Okay, so today, I'm going to give you an understanding here of what's going on. So what you have here are got two separate guys. They're very different from each other, right? And they can't imagine that they'd have anything to do with each other, okay? But that's because the truth has been hidden from them and that the reality is actually this. And what is this? What this basically is that everybody in this picture is a part of everybody in this picture. In fact, take this guy here, right? He's actually the culmination of the entire picture as it concentrates at this point. Take this woman here. She's actually the entire picture as it concentrates at this point. Why do I say that? Because if I pull this woman out of the picture, what will happen to the picture? What? It doesn't just fall apart. It disappears because everybody is the outline of everybody. Okay? Everybody is the outline of everybody. And so too, that's reality. So if this is the way you see things, so you think I'm separate from you, you're separate from me, what could we possibly have to do with each other, right? And so if I ask for tzedakah, and you say, well, okay, I mean, this guy's got nothing to do with me, but, I feel guilty, so I should help him out, and give him tzedakah. No, the truth is that there's only one self, one soul, one consciousness, and helping this guy out is helping you out because he's a part of you and you're a part of him, and you both exist and emerge from each other simultaneously. All right? Any questions on that? No questions? All right. So let's go. So we're now at the bottom of the first page here. The supreme holiness is the holiness of silence, of being. When man recognizes himself as non-existent in his individual inwardness, and lives a collective life, the life of all, experiencing the vitality of the inanimate, the vegetative, and the animal, the life of all being, of all speaking creatures, of each and every man, the life of all, recognizing, attaining, feeling everything. All right, let's go over that again. The supreme holiness. The highest level of holiness is called the holiness of silence. Now, why would it be the holiness of silence? Now, again, what is our definition of holiness? It's spelled W-H-O, right? It's wholeness, completeness. For this guy to be a whole person, he has to realize that he is part of a whole picture, right? So when you realize that you are part of a whole picture, then you are holy, okay? But what gets in the way of holiness or wholeness? What gets in the way of holiness and wholeness? It has something to do with silence or non-silence. How do words interfere with holiness? Yeah.
If it has to do with silence, then I think it's staying only within yourself and not interacting and connecting with the outside world and other people.
No, it's actually the opposite. Yeah.
Words create boundaries, but we're trying to see the whole picture.
Exactly. What do words do? They cut everything into pieces. We talked about this probably at the very beginning of the year. The word for word is teva, which means a box. Another word for word is mila, which means to cut. And another word for word is davar, which means a thing. Now, why are the words for words correlating to cut, box, thing? Because essentially what words are doing is cutting everything into pieces and stuffing it into a box, okay? So to really get to holiness, you have to get to a place of silence where you're not allowing the words to confuse you to think that the table is separate from the chair because it's called a table and this is called a chair. They must be separate. Okay? So too over here in this picture, the fact that, you know, everybody has a different name, right? There's men, there's women, there's white people, there's black people, and they're all so different, but the names seem to give off this implication that we're separate from each other and we're independent of each other. But we're not. We're really different facets and aspects of each other. So Rav Kook says the supreme holiness is the holiness of silence. If you want to get to the highest level of holiness, is when you get to a place where you experience life before the word, beyond the word. But when you're stuck in the words, you are spellbound to the words. And now you're seeing everything in boxes. Okay? It's like I was walking with my son when he was a little boy. And he looked up in the sky and he went, Zeh! And he points and he was pointing to a bird. So this is my opportunity to teach my son, educate my son. I said, well, that's a bird. And he said, bird. And I felt so good because I just educated him. I just enlightened him, right? And then another thing flew by. He went, Zeh! And I said, no, that's also a bird. And I remember him being very surprised at that. And he went, but. And then I thought, wow, I'm enlightening my son because I'm helping him label the world, right? Categorize the world. But as much as I'm helping him, what did I actually do? I'm boxing reality and cutting it into pieces. Because before, he just saw all of reality culminate in that bird. But now it's a bird, and it's not a plane, and it's not a cloud. And so essentially, there is a problem with words, that the words are giving off this impression that we're not one, right? We're not one. We actually think that this is an arm. But the truth is, where does the arm end and the shoulder begin? Where's exactly the line? So we've given these names and these labels to different parts of the body, but they're not separate from each other. So we think they are because we've named them, we've labeled them. So when you were in your mother's womb, you were taught all of Torah, right? And then just before you're born, an angel touches you here, and you forget all the Torah, right? You forget all the Torah. Well, why does the angel touch you here if it's about forgetting? You'd think the angel would kick you in the head or something. Why touches you over the mouth? Right? So I actually heard Rabbi Tatz give a very nice answer to that, that what causes you to forget the original wisdom is when you start to talk and put it into words. Right? As soon as you start to try to put truth into words, you start losing the truth. Because the truth is one, and the truth is whole. And there's many facets to him, but not separate. But the words are giving off this impression that it's all separate and disconnected. You follow that? So that's why, how much time do you spend a day just getting in touch with silence? Just getting in touch with the world in silence? Because that's a beginning to start to sense Kedusha. That's why I think it's very important on a Friday night dinner that the lights should be low. Because when the lights are bright, the hard edges that are cutting us off from each other are so apparent. So it's very hard to get to a Kedusha moment, a whole moment where you feel that we're actually sharing one neshama and we're really facets of each other. But when the lights are low, there's a certain ambience that you can create, a kind of spiritual Holy Spirit, a holy experience, where you start feeling that all this seems to cut me from you and me from the rest of the reality, doesn't cut us off from each other. So going back to the original point, Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvotav, the goal of Jewish life is actually not to be separate. The goal of Jewish life is to be whole, right? Well, most people think that the goal of Jewish life is to separate yourself and to experience yourself apart from others. when in fact it means to become whole and a part of others. So that's the question. Are you a part from others or are you part of others? We believe that we're all a part of each other. Right? All a part of each other. That's why you shouldn't count a minion. Right? You shouldn't count a minion. So we say, oh, she had the mecha or whatever, right? But we don't count numbers. Because who's number one? How could you be number one without me? Right? So that's the point, that it's better to kind of figure out if it's 10 people with words, because numbers suggest that there's one, and one doesn't need two. Right? But the truth is that this Jew needs the other Jew to be a Jew. And so how could he be one? How could he be the first one to count? So where are you supposed to start in the counting when we're all completely one? Yeah.
Isn't there also an element of us being a part of a greater whole and that we're not the whole?
I didn't say we're the whole. That's the whole point. We're all a part of a greater whole. We're all part of each other, and we're all part of a greater whole, i.e. Hashem.
Exactly. So in terms of assigning numbers, wouldn't it make more sense to say you, part A, part B, part C, or part 1, part 2, part 3?
No, the point is that we have a consciousness that you shouldn't count people because they're not numbers and they don't exist independently of each other. So how can you say that's one when you can't be you without everybody else here? You know?
No, I mean, that's like using the example of your picture, that'd be like counting faces on the picture. You're right, that without one face.
That's a very good point. Right, I actually do that. I forgot to do that. I ask people to count how many people are here. And people start counting them. Right? But the truth is, you can't count them because they're all connected. There are many different facets, but they're not separate entities at all. And that's what's so brilliant about this picture.
Yeah, they're not separate entities, but they still form unique.
Yes, but you have to stand and you have to look at this carefully. Every individual here is actually an individual expression of the entire picture, right? This person is the culmination of all these people at this point. And this person is the culmination of all these people at that point. In other words, if you had true consciousness of yourself, you would realize that you are simply the entire universe as it appears in this point. That's being creating the image of God. But we don't think that way. We think there's me, there's you, there's... No, there's just oneness. And oneness, you know, is almost like the entire ocean, you know, culminates in waves into a quarry, right? And quarry is really just a particular expression of the entire ocean at this point. And every single one of us is a particular expression of the entire one reality at this point, at this point, at this point, and therefore we're actually all connected.
So why can't we count the culminations of your speaking?
That's because it's just confusing. It's just making a point. I mean, often we end up do counting, but we use a pasuk. It was to maintain a sensitivity that there's no such thing as one without two, and so how could one be one when there's already two before the one? And so the idea is learning to experience yourself as part of a community. That's really an important point of what you should gain from yeshiva life and what you should try to accomplish yeshiva life. The power of community, where we really are together, and we experience our own power when it's nested within the communal power. Okay, but when people start speaking Lashon Hara, who needs you? This world would be a better place without you. He doesn't understand that if this guy leaves, everybody disappears, because we're all a part of each other, and yet we're not each other. Okay, so going back to this. The supreme holiness is the holiness of silence, of being. When man recognizes himself as a non-existence in his individual awareness, you as an individual don't exist. You are not existing as an individual. You are existing as a what?
Part of a whole.
Part of a whole, but you're not an individual?
You are.
So how are you an individual? No, you're not an individual inside the hall. You are what?
An individual expression.
You are what?
An expression.
Exactly. You're an individual expression of the whole. Right? You're not an individual set off from other individuals because there's only oneity, but there are many individual expressions of oneity. And that's what you are. All right? So that's what he says, when man recognizes himself as the non-existent in his individual inwardness. Inside, in my true inner self, I'm not an individual. I'm part of a whole. I'm a unique expression of a whole. And lives a collective life. And that's the point. Are you living a collective life? When you realize to really be true to yourself, what should you care about? The whole. Exactly. To really be true to yourself, you care about the whole. Going back to the metaphor, two guys are getting army boots. One wants it because he wants it to be comfortable. His friend got new army boots. Why shouldn't I get army boots? He wants army boots for himself. Another one wants army boots, new army boots, because I am a soldier. And I don't live for myself. I live the entire army. And therefore, I need these boots. It's not me. I don't need these boots. The entire army needs me to have these boots. That's a complete shift in the way you think as a Jew. That your individual needs are the communal's needs. What I want and what I care about as a community. And that's why the Shemona Esrei is difficult for people. Because if I were to ask you to write a daily prayer, most people would write, "May I be healthy. May I be wealthy, may I get into Harvard," right? I mean, I know you wouldn't pray that anymore, right? May I get into Harvard. But, what would those prayers basically be? What would those prayers basically be? Selfish. It's not bad. They're just very much about myself. They're not in consideration of the world, in consideration of the future of the Jewish people. Sometimes I go to shul and sometimes I give tzedakah, but my life isn't about the Jewish people. But that's a mistake. Because your true individual self is rooted in and ultimately found when you live for the klal. When you live for the Jewish people, then you find your individual self. Right. Until you live for the Jewish people in the unique individual way that you can live for the Jewish people, you haven't really found your true self. See, that's what love is really all about. Right? There's a number of kinds of love. One kind of love is, I love her and she loves me. Why? Well, because we look really great together and all my friends are going to say, oh, look who he's got as his girlfriend. Right? And she's saying, oh my gosh, look at this. Everybody knows that I'm dating this guy. Right? Is that love? No, that's not love. That's business. Right? That's business. What can I get from you? What can you get from me? Now, business isn't bad, but that's what business is. Business is what I can get from you and what you can get from me. And if we feel that's an equal trade-off, then we stay together. But it's not love. It's business. Right? But there's another level of love, and those marriages break down very quickly. Because you know what happens in business. If I can find a supplier who is cheaper and quicker, business is business. And that's why a lot of marriages break down, because it wasn't a marriage, it was a business. And if I can find somebody that can deliver the goods, better than you, I go. I change addresses. But there's another level of, which is very beautiful. It's not what I can get from you and what you can get from me. It's what I can give to you and what you can give to me. And that's already love, real love. It's not the highest level of love. Right? The highest level of love is not what I can give to you and you can give to me. It's what we can give to the community together. And they have done research on the happiest marriages. And one of the key principles of happy marriages are people whose marriage is for the klal. They have a common purpose that goes beyond their own marriage, right? So they could be really in love with each other, and they walk the most exotic beaches of the world, and they watch the most overwhelmingly beautiful sunsets, but it's me and you, babe, but it's not about the world, right? Let's lose this world and find our love. And Judy says, no, you've lost yourself. You've lost yourself when yourself isn't committed to klal. And that's what Jewish life is about. It's about klal. It's about the collective. It's about the greater whole that I live for. And when a person does that, the life of all, experiencing the vitality of the inanimate, the vegetative, the animal, the life of all. In other words, when a person lives klal, they actually experience everything. Animals, they experience the trees. Now, this is a very high level. This person in Kedusha is experiencing the entire universe inside of them. Because each one of these people has all of them inside of them. Because the real me is all of us. And so when a person is truly on the level of Kedusha, then they experience all of reality. It's an overwhelming experience. So he says, of all speaking creatures, of each and every man, the life of all, recognizing, attaining, feeling everything. So what they call, what I've seen in books, that this is actually a New Age language called cosmic consciousness. Because what I've seen, cosmic consciousness is an experience of the whole within you. You are so identified with the whole, you're so committed to the whole, you experience the whole is your identity. You see, when you're a little kid and you say, I, you think of your body, you think of your toys. That's your level of selfhood. But when you get older and you say I, that I already includes your family, your friends, right? And they are an inherent part of your experience, your I experience. When you get older and you get married, you say I, then that I already includes your wife. You're not two separate I's. When you say I, you experience your wife as part of that, right? As you've all heard the story of Rev Arya Levine going to the doctor with his wife. And the doctor said, what's the problem? And he said, our leg hurts us. Right? Our leg hurts us. But when Moshe Rabbeinu said, I, what did that mean to him? Klal Yisrael. He didn't have a separate I. If Klal Yisrael was in pain, he was in pain. Right? That's an experience of an inclusive I whereby, yes, I'm an individual, but I'm an individual expression of a collective. And that's where people find happiness. And so they found that marriages that are committed to a cause much greater than their own marriage are marriages that are much more successful. Much more successful. So that's why when a person gets married, we bless them that you should have a bayit ne'eman b'Yisrael. Why? What does a bayit ne'aman b'Yisrael mean? What does a bayit ne'aman b'Yisrael mean? What does ne'aman mean? Ne'aman means, yeah? Yes, you should build a house that's faithful to the Jewish people. That's a blessing. Now, when my house is about the Jewish people, not about our little house and what all we want for ourselves, we don't care about the, oh yeah, if they knock on our door, we'll give a little tzedakah. No, it's about klal. That's what it's about. And the more you commit yourself to klal, the more you find yourself, the more empowered you are. You live as a representative for Klal Yisrael. Any questions on this? Yeah.
I understand why it would make sense for somebody to be silent in order to connect with God around the world. All things except for human beings, but if language is a facet for communication and connection, then why should you be silent if you want to connect to other people? Wouldn't you assume that you would want to speak?
We're not against speech, but it's halakhically forbidden for a couple who are in the midst of intimacy to speak. Right? Because speaking would imply that we're separate when we're not. So there's a time to speak and there's a time not to speak. Right. And part of that not to speak is allowing yourself to get beyond what the implications of words are causing us, which is a sense of separateness from each other. That everything in this room is separate from each other. When the truth is that everything in this room is no different than this. And if I were to take a picture, let's say I took a picture of this cup, and I took a picture of it from 1,000 different angles, right? And different levels of zoom. And now I put 1,000 pictures on the wall. You walk in, would you know that's actually one cup? You'd probably think it's 1,000 different things. When it's really just 1,000 different facets and angles of one cup. Well, welcome to yourself. You are just, I don't mean that in a bad way, right? But you are a, so to speak, angle of the whole, okay? And none of us are separate. And right now I'm just talking to myself. And right now you're just looking at yourself, sorry. Right now you're just looking at yourself and listening to yourself. And yet I'm not you and you're not me, but we're part of each other. And the more you behave in a way that affirms that, the more you start to experience that, that's a life of meaning, that's a life of joy, that's a life of vitality. Because you're being your true self, because your true self is rooted in one whole self that you are a facet of. Now let's look at the next one, number 4. Life itself, all of life, its very essence, cannot possibly be anything other than the elemental longing to be close to God. Everything is about being close to God. Everything you do is to come close to God. Right? Even the first sin was born out of the desire to come close to God. Right? Why? Because what did the snake say to Adam and Eve? Did the snake say, hey, Eve, Adam, if you eat of this tree, you're going to be wealthy. You're going to be so rich. He didn't say that because people aren't interested in being rich. They're not? No. Couldn't care less. Did he say, hey, Adam, Eve, if you eat from this tree, you're going to be famous. They're going to name apple juice after you. Doesn't interest anybody. Nobody could care less of being famous. Hey, Adam, Eve, if you eat from this tree, you'll have the most enhanced sexual life. Doesn't say that. Because nobody's interested in that. You know what he says? He says, if you ate this tree, you'll be like God. Because that is the primary motivation behind every act of behavior. I want to be like God. Or I want to be God. But the truth is, you can't be God. You don't have to. Because you already are a part of God. And mitzvahs are only helping you become conscious of a fact that already is, was, and will never change. That you and I are part of a one self, a one soul. And so Rav Kook is saying that life itself, all of life, its very essence, cannot possibly be anything other than the elemental longing to be close to God. But what does it mean to be close to God? Because now most people read that and say, I don't have a longing to come close to God. First of all, I have no anticipation I would ever get close to God. Why? Because you know where he is. He's on the other side of the rainbow. And every step towards the infinite leaves an infinite journey ahead of me. I don't want to get close to God. You know? Sounds like religion. I want to be close to God and say, you know, say, Taka Mamish, wow, all the time, Baruch Hashem, Emir Hashem all the time, I'm not really close to God. Now, what does it mean to be close to God? What does it feel like to be close to God? It means to feel close to the sense of allness, of oneness, of wholeness. And that's a desire. The desire to come close to God is the desire to experience a shared self. That's what it means. And a person can say, look, I don't believe in God. I don't like God. But this guy's so driven to be part of a symphony. And he doesn't understand that the symphonic experience does have an element of a God experience. Because being part of that symphony, you no longer experience yourself as this separate individual instrument. But you feel you're all part of this one thing. A friend of mine was a maestro, a conductor, and he said the most ecstatic moments as a conductor is when the symphony was so interfaced, so one, that if I wanted a roar from the trombones, I would just think it and they would roar. That our minds became one mind, and it was like my fingers, right? That we were actually one, and that's an amazing experience. Have you ever experienced yourself sitting in a room and you're singing Dvaika songs, and you all stop at the same time? Nobody talks. There's some like inner knowing that we're all going to stop now. Powerful. Or you watch these jazz bands, and the synchronicity between them is unbelievable, but they're just jamming. And there's this going on. There's a psychic connection where we all become part of a oneself. And that's what people are looking for, and that is a little hint of God, but it's not the most profound experience of God. So he says, life itself, all of life, its very essence, cannot possibly be anything other than the elemental longing to be close to God. Thus it fulfilled the unique connotation of human life. What makes human life unique? Composed of the desire for a self shared by all creatures. There you go. What's unique about human beings is they desire a sense of self shared by all creatures. That's the search for God. Along with the striving for completeness. I want to grow, I want to feel part of oneself, and I want to feel that I'm growing and becoming more whole. In this, it is a true shadow of the absolute unconditional life of the absolute divine. In the image of God, he created him. Right? So that's what the image of God means. That the unconditional life is a constant thirst for God. Even people who don't believe in God, even people who hate God, all that drives them is God. They'll say, I don't accept that because you have a different definition of God. Our definition of God is not a particular infinite eternal being floating in outer space somewhere over there, right? We don't believe God exists. We believe that God is existence and infinitely more. And you're in existence and you're part of an existence. And that's what drives you. You want to feel part of a greater infinite whole. And that's it. And that's when you feel really great. You know? Any questions I wanted to share? No? Another one. Let's go to the next one. So this is from Rav Tzvi Elimelech Shapiro Dinov, which is a Hasidic piece. Ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. If God wanted us to be holy, why did he create us with such gross natural appetites? He wants us to be holy, so why do I have these drives for pizza? Right? Why do I have drives for the physical world? He replied, because it's precisely in the realm of nature that we are expected to attain holiness. The goal of holiness is not to leave nature. The goal of holiness is to find it in nature. This explains the end of the verse, for I, your Lord, am holy. Can serve as a rationale for the beginning of the verse, ye shall be holy. Just as my holiness is expressed in the coexistence of both my transcendence and immanence, so I expect you to be holy by means of both involved and separate from the world. Okay. What's he saying? He's giving us another part of the experience of holiness. I mentioned to you before that even though the term used for holiness is often havdalah, nivdal, and people translate that to be separate, a better translation would be transcendent, okay? Because what does transcendent mean? It means I'm so beyond it, I can also be within it, right? The example I've given you, I think, before was alcohol. We talked about that. A person who's an alcoholic and they stay away from alcohol, that's not transcendence, that's removal. And that's very admirable. But a person who's truly transcended, a person who's truly removed themselves from alcohol, don't even have a conflict with the concept of alcohol. If you're truly removed and transcendent of alcohol, it means you can drink it without becoming addicted to it. So Jewish life, to be holy, to be a whole person, means that you're able to be a whole person. You're in this world, but you're not trapped by this world. You're able to eat on Shabbat, but you don't become addicted to the food on Shabbat. You make kiddush on wine, of all things to make kiddush. Why not do it on air? Or do it on a piece of bread? But on wine? But yes, exactly. Wine, which represents the potential for addiction, is the potential for holiness. If you can make that which can be addictive into holy by not being addictive, but enjoying it, then you're holy. You're a whole person. But if you need that drink or you need that iPhone, which nobody in this yeshiva has any problems with that, one second, right? You need that iPhone, then you are now a slave to iPhone. You are not transcendent of an iPhone. Now, there's some people that are able to remove themselves from the iPhone. Put your iPhone in the box in the Beit Midrash. That's very good. It's a good start. But you're not transcendent yet because you and the iPhone are in conflict, at least theoretically, right? A person that transcends it means I can have it in my pocket and I use it when I need to and I know not to use it when I don't need to. So I include it. I am a whole person and I'm not confined or limited to anything. All right? So that's another important idea of the idea of holiness. Yeah.
What about cigarettes? You said that it has the potential to be addictive. Well, let's say I have one a month.
Fine. You could have one a month. I don't know if that's healthy to do, but that's not the question. The question isn't health. The question is, are you addicted? If you could have one a month and not find yourself finishing off three packs, then you're not addicted anymore to smoking. But that doesn't mean you should smoke for other reasons. It's not healthy, right? But the question is, to be a whole person means that you are not enslaved in any way. Getting out of Egypt is something you have to do every day. Because Egypt is basically slavery. And you have to say, I refuse to be a slave, not to my iPhone, right? Not to my girlfriend, right? I'm not a slave. I can call and I don't have to be on the phone all night and find myself 3 a.m. and I don't get up for a minyan. That's a person who is in an addictive relationship and that will end up real bad. I promise you, it will end up terrible. Love is not addiction, right? That's infatuation. Love is sometimes, we can get together. Sometimes we don't have to get together. We don't have to get it together. We don't have to do anything, right? But when the point that I'm just can't control, then I become a slave. I am not a whole person. A whole person is a person that is free. It's free. So that's another very, very critical idea about holiness. All right, that's it for today. And we'll do the rest tomorrow, and I'll bring in a new sheet tomorrow.